Welcome to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations featuring rock expert Frank Ost. I'm your host, Tim Friedman. It is the end of season three already. Frank and I have had such a great time bringing this podcast to you. You can listen, of course, wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, etc. And we're going to keep doing it. We have our featured artists. We have some new surprises coming away in season four. And take a little break during October, let you catch up on our 40-plus episodes. They're all archived for you. You can listen to anyone, anytime you like. We're going to start a brand new season, November 1st, season five, all new episodes. And Paul McCartney will be front and center in our featured artist category. We'll have highlights of season three this week, then season two next week, season one the week after that, and then, just before November begins, preview of season four. We're going to keep you up to date with the concert calendar, a lot of stuff going on, especially next month and as we round out 2021, and we'll also do our fun category, which now starts our podcast, Today in Rock History and Birthdays. Today in Rock History, October 4th, 1961, Bob Dylan made his debut at Carnegie Hall in New York City.
Wow, that's quite a debut.
He only got
Carnegie Hall.
Only got paid $20 for the night.
Okay.
And get this, only 53 people attended, mostly friends.
Yeah, or homeless, I would imagine.
1963, 18-year-old Eric Clapton asked to join a little group known as the Yardbirds.
All right.
Janis Joplin was unfortunately found dead of a heroin overdose. Overdose on this day in 1970. She was only 27 and just finished up that second album of hers, Pearl.
Yeah, that's a real shame.
You know, John Lennon, remember that Lost Weekend phase of his?
Absolutely. What is it? My Pang?
My Pang.
Yes.
The number one album turned out to be Walls and Bridges, was released on this date in 1974 with the help of Elton John. The song Whatever Gets You Through the Night, featuring Elton on keyboards and backing vocals, also made it to number one. The album also featured number nine, Dream, and a young, soon-to-be record producer named Jimmy Iovine was the album's overdub engineer.
I didn't realize that.
Just a few years away from striking it big with Tom Petty.
And I'm really glad that that wasn't his real studio swan song, that we got another one later on in 1980, because it wasn't one of his best efforts.
Double Fantasy was outstanding, wasn't it?
Yes, sure
1980.
Was.
Speaking of which, that year, Carly Simon on this date, October 4th, collapsed on stage in Pittsburgh. You know, she was never really comfortable on stage.
Yes, I'd heard that.
Great tunes, but she had nervous exhaustion, collapsed on stage in Pittsburgh. The rest of the tour had to be canceled.
Oh, what a shame.
Remember the group Squeeze later on featuring Paul Carrack?
Sure, absolutely.
Tempted. They broke up officially in 1982. Some of the group members reformed in 1984. You know, Michael Gibbons, the drummer for Badfinger, you know, their hits Come and Get It, Day After Day, No Matter What.
Love him. Blue.
He died in this state in 2005 at only age 56.
Oh, Lord. That,
died in
that
sleep.
Group was definitely cursed.
They were.
No doubt about it.
Paul Revere, organist, vocalist, Paul Revere and the Raiders, died following a bout with cancer. This date 7 years ago, he was 76 years old. So
that's too bad.
That's sad. Birthdays, Rutherford B. Hayes, not easy to say. One-term president, 19th U.S. president, born in the state in 1822 in Ohio and Delaware.
That's right.
A graduate of Kenyon College.
All right.
Buster Keaton was born in the state in 1895. Charlton Heston, another tough guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
1924. Chris Lowe of the Pet Shop Boys, one of my favorites, and they appear time and again, or they will, on Download Discovery for me.
Sure.
He was born in 1959. John Secada, if you ever see a picture of him online, he's dressed as a Chippendale.
Oh, really? Little, I didn't realize
buff
that.
And everything. Hmm. Anyway, the Cuban-American singer. I was born in 1961. Liev Schreiber, he's an actor, you know, and he narrates all those HBO sports specials like Hard Knocks and whatever.
Gotcha.
He was born in the state in 1967. Keeping up to date with the concert calendar, on Thursday, this coming Thursday, October 6th, if you're going to Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, Rod Stewart's going to be playing at the Coliseum there. You know, Celine Dion and Elton have played there. So he'll be starting a little thing in October and November of some select dates at Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, I would think that'd be a great show.
Kent Stage has some good shows coming up, too. On the 7th, Don Felder of the Eagles is going to be playing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Thursday night. Sting begins a residency then after Rod Stewart at Caesar's Palace. Select dates in October, November, they'll kind of be switching off and on, you know. But Sting is going to be playing. He's already had that concert tour of his postponed a couple of times because of COVID.
Sure.
And, of course, the Rock Hall induction ceremony is coming up at the end of this month, Saturday, October 30th. Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse.
That's right.
Monkees MGM Grand, November 3rd. Chicago, same place, November 4th. Carl Palmer's ELP Legacy. He's coming to the Kent Stage.
Okay.
On Friday, November 12th, celebrating the 50th anniversary of that supergroup.
That might be worth checking out. I don't know what their set list is going to be like, but maybe I'll check it out online and see if anything I like.
Buddy Rich liked his drumming. Remember that?
Absolutely, sure.
Bob Dylan just announced a gigantic tour. The first leg starts in the United States. It's going to end. It's a worldwide tour. It's not going to end until 2024.
Good Lord.
So he'll be at the State Theater, the KeyBank State Theater, downtown Playhouse Square on Friday, November 5th. Tickets went on sale already, like last Monday or last Friday or something like that. It's got like 3,000 seats. Don't know if it'll be sold out. I don't think that's a show. We talked about this. That's probably why he announced the concert tour, because he heard our show last week.
I think so.
It said, be in your seats because the show promptly starts at 8 p.m. Promptly.
That's right. Yeah.
I wonder if he needs to be in bed by 9 or something.
He probably
like that.
Does nowadays. He doesn't want to start at 10 o'clock anymore.
You know, that's only the third date of this U.S. tour, so he'll be nice and fresh on Friday, November the 5th. Todd Rundgren's coming to the MGM Grand, MGM Northfield Park, that is.
Sure.
In Northfield, of course, Saturday and Sunday, the 6th and 7th of November. Saturday and Sunday. So it should be an interesting show. I'm sure he'll have something to say about the proceedings the week before.
I'm sure.
And maybe he'll do a phone-in type of virtual call-in. Hello, how are you, Rock Hall? Thanks for inducting me, because I got a show tonight in Cincinnati. That might be a possibility for him, as opposed to showing up in person that night.
Could be.
One of the early episodes of Season 3 featured my longtime friend and former colleague, Tim Doherty of WONE 97.5 in Akron. He just announced, Tim did, that he's going to be leaving the station just shy of his 37th anniversary there. He is the Rock and Roll Authority. He and his wife, Sue, are moving out permanently to the Pacific Northwest out in Portland. Sue has just recently taken a position there at one of the fine radio stations in Portland. And if Tim chooses to stay on the air, I'm sure he'll be great at one of those stations out there, nor in any challenge that would present itself as he moves through life. So, Tim, it's been great knowing you. We'll stay in touch, of course. And, you know, I've known Sue for almost 10 years now, and I always wanted to work with her when I was in radio. She's one of the best programmers in Cleveland, and then for a long time in Akron. So best of luck to Tim and Sue. We're going to miss you. So Season 3, Episode 2, had Tim Doherty stop by for a chat about one of our favorite bands, Led Zeppelin. Can you name your favorites after that, or is it too difficult?
I wrote that down because there are so many good ones, and a lot of people gravitate toward the big hits, the ones like Led Zeppelin II, Led Zeppelin IV with Stairway to Heaven. My favorites, I usually tend to go a little bit different because I've heard all those now for a long time. Led Zeppelin III was one of my favorites right after Physical Graffiti. It was more acoustic in a way, more hippie influenced, I think. And also the next one, I think my third favorite is kind of a tie between Houses of the Holy or Presence. Now, the song Houses of the Holy is on Physical Graffiti, but right. then the next album they called Houses of the Holy. So a lot of good stuff on that. But Presence was, I think, panned by some of the critics way back when, but I think it's a great album.
Frankie, one of the things I like most about this Season 3 was your best album covers segment.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
One of the biggest problems with the record was that the zipper was doing damage to the record once they packed it. As you can imagine, that metal thing on the outside dug right into the record. So they had a lot of returns. They found out that by unzipping it down to the label, they could, you know, remedy the situation. So that's what ended up happening. The other one I have, which was another big album of the year that we haven't mentioned, is Chicago Live at Carnegie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
It was their fourth record. And basically what it did was kind of sum up the first four albums, or first three albums, and then kind of added a little bit more to it. Of course, the album package contained all the pertinent facts about the songs, band, content, but also the original LP had two giant posters of the band, a poster of Carnegie Hall's exterior, an insert about voter information, and a 20-page softcover booklet that contained photos of the band playing during concerts, and also it contained a full touring schedule of their first tour through the 1971 U.S. tour, which had literally every concert date they'd ever played.
All right, Frankie, I'm starting a record collection, and I don't have anything from Yes. Where do I begin?
Well, I think the most obvious is what's known as the Yes album. This was their third studio album, and it kind of came after they studied their lineup on the first two records. Was kind of in flux. By the third record, they had the guys they were going to go with for a while. And four of the songs are over 6 minutes long. Two of them are over 9 minutes long.
Wow.
So it really gives you an idea of what the band does, what they think is important. And really, it gives you a taste of their progressive rock and kind of gets you ready for later songs where they'd be doing like one song aside on some of their later stuff. But this is a tremendous album. It's got Perpetual Change, I've Seen All Good People, and just a fun record to listen to.
Another new segment, Download Discovery, would give you an insight. People know our tastes now, what we like, what
I think
we
so,
kind
yeah.
of not like. But I really get into alternative and some of that stuff from the 80s and 90s, and actually into today, too. So
sure.
That was a fun segment of ours. So was yours.
Definitely.
I've downloaded a lot of what you've turned me on to at Download Discovery.
Yeah, it's fun to go back and look at those songs that were either completely forgotten or never known in the first place.
Yeah, and deserve a chance to be listened to again.
Sure, definitely.
For me, I do have The Jam and Bitterest Pill I Ever Had to Swallow, which was a 1982 release from The Gift album by The Jam. Your Download Discovery, is it an album or a song?
It's an album, and one that I know you're familiar with also, by a group by the name of Ambrosia, who started their career in the late 70s. Now, their hits would be in the early 80s, The Biggest Part of Me.
Yeah, David Pack and Gang.
Yeah, You're the Only Woman. Good stuff, well worth looking into, but the one that I love is their first record.
When did it come out?
Yeah, it came out in 1975, and it was progressive rock. Think of a mix between Alan Parsons Project and Yes, and you'll probably be pretty close to what their sound was. Definitely different from what would come later in their more soft rock phase.
Speaking of deserving, after we got done with our lists of Hall of Fame inductees over the years, we had our Two Should Get In segment.
That's right.
They were good. I had like Styx, Mariah Carey, INXS. You had some
sure.
good ones too,
yeah,
didn't you?
Definitely. Yeah, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Bad Company. Mm-hmm. A lot of great groups that, for one reason or another, maybe reputation sometimes, just haven't been included.
They've been overlooked. Jake mm-hmm. Isles is a good example.
Exactly.
Later on this month, or maybe next month, Rock Hall, I'm sure, will be issuing their new nominees for the class of 2022. Usually they do it around this time of year, but things have all been pushed back. You know, the induction ceremonies aren't happening till almost November, when they used
sure.
to happen in April or whatever. So we'll see the new list of nominees, and then we'll have something to say about
yeah.
who's not on that list.
And perhaps. It'll be fun to see how many of the ones that we brought up are actually on the list. That'll
yeah.
be neat.
And we can make a case for our favorites in this year's class of nominees.
Right.
And again, in Season 3, we brought back a really fun feature we've had since the beginning, One Hit Wonders, Jungle Fever. Hitting number 8 in the spring of 72, the Shakachas. Remember them?
No, I do not, but I have heard of the song, and quite a song it is.
The song hit number 8 here in the States in the spring of 72, but was banned by the BBC. It was not heard in the UK because they said of the general moaning and sexual innuendo of it.
Yeah.
It was a Belgian fictional group, and so when it was time to tour to promote the song, not over there, but over here, it was performed by a Latin New York trio.
Really?
Yeah. So, okay. Jungle Fever, the Chucka Chaws. Next up, White Plains, My Baby Loves Lovin', released in April of 1970, peaked at number 13, sung by Tony Burrows, who had other one-hit wonders, probably on the charts at the same time, like United We Stand and Love Grows and Gimme That Ding and Beach Baby. He was with the session group called First Class and Brotherhood of Man.
That's right.
Edison Lighthouse, the Pipkins. Well, with the White Plains, they had My Baby Loves Lovin'. It did really well for him. I love that song. Tony Burrows was the lead singer behind all those songs. And then White Plains followed this up with a tune called Lovin' You Baby, which only made it to number 82.
Yeah.
So then they were kind of done. They only spent 2 weeks on the Hot 100 chart, but love the song, My Baby Loves Lovin', The White Plains. Top albums, 1975. We'd like to give you a rundown of these number one albums for the year and kind of trace things as we head toward 1982 and see how many artists were still with us, like Elton John and Linda Ronstadt. They hung around, as did Olivia. Chicago kind of reinvented themselves in the early to mid-80s.
Exactly.
But in 1975, Elton John, who had spent the previous 5 weeks on the top of the charts, rounding out 74, was there to begin 75 with his Greatest Hits album.
Yeah, that's a terrific Greatest Hits set, too.
Ohio Players and Fire. Heart Like a Wheel, Linda Ronstadt started hitting big. AWB, The Average White Band.
Yeah,
I had to pick up the pieces.
I think about that record, the White Album, as they called it. Just a genius set. And I forgot that it was so big that it got the number one.
Yeah, Cut the Cake. Pick up the pieces. Wasn't that number one?
Yeah, I believe so.
Cut the Cake was top 10. Number one albums from 1973, Seventh Sojourn, The Moody Blues, Carryover from 1972. Started out the year. And then Carly Simon's No Secrets, you know, You're So Vain, The Right Thing to Do. That's a good album. One of the tops of the year. It's been 5 weeks at the top of the charts in 1973.
Yeah, that's when she really broke big. Yeah.
Featured Artist, Season 3, Santana.
Fantastic stuff.
Can you imagine on stage with Earth, Wind, and Fire? We talked about how great that show was with Chicago.
Sure, absolutely.
Them backing up Carlos Santana and the gang? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Three Dog Night. I kind of wish I'd seen them. We saw, I'm sure, at one time or another, at Blossom or Public Hall or something, some of these reunion concerts, the Buckinghams, the Grassroots.
Yeah, the Happy Together tours, things like that. And I know they were on some of those. And, you know, sometimes your tastes get in your way almost. I don't want to see them. But, you know, when you go back and you remember how good they were, just to listen to an hour of their music would have been fun.
I remember, if you listen to the songs that I just rattled off, there's more than a dozen. You put those together on a little compilation CD, and you'll be talking about Happy Together. You'll have a smile on your face from now until an hour from now.
Oh, absolutely.
All those tunes are great, great songs, and they're not all schmaltzy or something, or not all the same vein. They're different kinds of songs.
No, some of them are real rock and roll songs, too.
Bad Company.
I really enjoyed the first few albums. I've said for many years that if you take my top five singers in rock history, Paul Rodgers would certainly be among the top five. Boy, has he got pipes.
He does. So one of our featured artists, of course, Frankie in Season 3, was Mark Farner of Grand Funk Railroad.
Absolutely.
Remember that interview? That was great. They're back in the summer. He's an interesting guy, isn't he?
He is, and quite a gentleman also. I was surprised at how eager he was to talk and very open and honest about things.
We have something, speaking of open and honest, we have a clip that did not air regarding the writing credit for We're an American Band, and also the falling out of Grand Funk Railroad and, of course, the legal troubles that ensued. So let's take a listen to that.
Great.
And when we were finished with the recording, Don Brewer came over to me, says, Mark, you know, I've never had 100% write credit on any song. Do you mind if I take it on this one? I immediately said, go ahead, Don. You know why? Because I'm a nice guy. I just gave him my 50% of that song because, you know, I'm a nice guy. But what happened as a result of that might turn somebody who was nice mean or nasty, but I'm not going to ever let that happen to me. I have to let things that happen go by. I have to exercise forgiveness because love is not going to live in this debt consciousness. And so rather than have things eating my lunch. I just forgive those guys for what they have done at going out with this fake funk. And I, you know, I go out as Mark Farner's American Band. Even though I was sued by the other two guys, they tried to get me to stop using my trademark. It cost a lot of money, but I won in federal court. The judge saw it the same way I saw it. And so, you know, there's not a lot of good relationship there anymore. And it seems to be just, you know, whatever, whether it's professional jealousy that I've been told. It's got to be professional jealousy. I don't know what it is, but it's the ego has something to do with it, I'm sure.
Another one that did not air, a nice interview clip with Alan Hewitt, the keyboardist for the Moody Blues. You know, he also had a lot to do with that Warrant hit, Cherry Pie, in 1990.
Absolutely, sure.
Gives you a little insight into how his illustrious career got started. So Alan Hewitt was a really good interview, too. Talk about engaging and really happy to be with us.
He was, and boy, talk about a great musician. Holy cow, I went back and listened to some of his just his solo work, and it's really good.
Actually, what happened is after I graduated high school, you know, I said, asked my folks, I said, you know, I'd really like to go to music school. And, of course, they go, well, you know, really? And I said, yeah. I got accepted and went there. And during while I was there to make extra money, I played with T-Bone Walker because at that point I was a drummer. And I went there because of, like, Chick Corea, you know, Return to Forever and all that kind of stuff. That's what I wanted to play, that stuff. I had been doing the band I had in Michigan was kind of a Emerson, Lake & Palmer type thing. And I had this huge drum set and you know, with gongs and timpanis and everything, just like Carl Palmer. Oh,
yeah. Talking Heads. Check out these artists who cite Talking Heads as their influence. Franz Ferdinand, one of today's artists. Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails. Kesha. Radiohead, who said their name came from the final cut on the Talking Heads album, True Stories.
Okay.
And also The Weeknd. Joe Walsh, solo artist, James Gang, Eagles, Ringo Starr and his all-star band. What do you think about Joe Walsh?
What a fantastic guitar player. And it just seems like he's one of those people that just kind of moseys through life and is always in the right place at the right time. And, you know, it kind of just feels that way. Terrific guitar player, but also, I think he's kind of a neat human being, too.
Like, guess who?
Yeah, and I think the key there is Canadian, because where we live here in Cleveland, Ohio, one of the AM stations, and it was an AM station that we listened to when we were growing up, maybe as many as all the other stations here in town, was a station called CKLW, which was just over the border in Windsor, Ontario.
The Big 8.
And they used to play a whole lot of Guess Who. Mm-hmm. And so I always thought that the Guess Who was very far more popular than I think maybe they actually were.
The psychedelic pop group from Winnipeg, Manitoba, had a bunch of hits from 68 to 75, and then it was over. Burton Cummings kind of pulled the plug and said, I want to be a solo artist. And we talked about his one and only hit here in the States. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Southern Rock and Folk Rock Part 1. That is the name of our featured artist segment this week around. Might as well start with Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young. What do you think, Frankie? Yeah, the folk rock, country rock, great harmonies, tremendous songwriting, and still around.
Yes, they are.
David Crosby left the Byrds late in 67. I guess maybe they left him.
Yeah, I think they fired him.
Yeah,
as
of his
the story
attitude,
goes.
You know, they said he had an attitude. Stephen Stills, Buffalo Springfield, had just broken up. Graham Nash left the Hollies in December. They needed a few things in order to succeed, Frankie.
Right.
A keyboardist and a drummer in order to tour. So they took care of that by hiring Dallas Taylor for drums. And a guy named Neil Young, keyboards, who was a member of Buffalo Springfield with Stephen Stills. So Stephen knew of Neil's work there. Young was given the option of remaining a solo artist as well, so he could still do some work with Crazy Horse. So
absolutely.
That interested him as well. They needed an agent. They needed a real shark of one, too, to get him on the map, and that was David Geffen.
Oh, okay.
Elliot Roberts, who would go on to create Asylum Records. So they were in good hands with David and Elliot. Van Morrison. So that's Van Morrison, our featured artist, who I would like to see at a pub in Ireland.
Oh, absolutely.
Or the UK on a Wednesday night or a Saturday night or
definitely
something. Shows up with his guitar.
Small venue, yeah.
Small venue place.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Dire Straits. So to promote the Brothers in Arms World Tour came about and came to the Blossom Music Center. In fact, it would hit over 100 different cities that year and in 86, and they would play 248 shows. Blossom Music Center, August 5th, 1985. They had nearly a show a night at that point, so I'm glad they finally came to the States.
They did, and triumphantly, might I add.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. You know, whether there's petty jealousy or not, or whatever reason people leave a band, sometimes you lose your drummer or your keyboardist, or they want to do other things.
Yeah, there's so few that seem to get along. I mean, we've told the story 100 times, haven't we, about the people that don't get along, so it's nice when a group gets along.
I don't know if he ever appeared at Blossom, do you think?
What's that?
Tom Blossom Petty? Music Center?
Yeah, I think that's where I saw him.
It'd be a good venue for him,
absolutely.
Wouldn't you think?
Yep.
Can be interactive with the crowd and, you know, just...
Just the right size, too.
The right size. Seemed like a really good guy, you know? Yeah. Somebody you want to work with. A lot of people did. Stevie Nicks loved working with him.
Absolutely.
And some other people. And Bob Dylan. His music really makes you stop and think. You know, if you really listen to it, and like you said, he has so many ideas in his head, that one... title may have nothing to do with what he's saying in the song, but it's still cool to listen to, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that sometimes we overemphasize his importance in rock, because where he really was most important to me was as a poet. And I think that's why you had so many cover versions of his work, because it was so easy to get the feel of it, to get into it, and so many people did.
So that'll do it for Highlights of Season 3. We hope you enjoyed it. We had some really good episodes, I thought. And Season 2 highlights coming up next week. We'll also run down Today in Rock History, and we'll keep you up to date, too, on our concert calendar. Brand new episodes begin, remember, the 1st of November, Season 5, and right around the corner is our one-year anniversary for Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations, featuring rock expert Frank Ost. I'm your host, Tim Friedman. We'll see you next week for highlights of Season 2, right here.